Welcome to a Friday edition of Locked On Heat. On that, by emailing us at lockedonheat@gmail.com.
Potential there, and I think there's enough of it where you're not quite sure about. Look, you don't want to get into the same situation that Minnesota did. They thought they were going to be in a great place with Jimmy, not just last season, which was enough to get them into the playoffs for the first time in 15 seasons, but they thought they were going to be able to lock him up beyond this. So they were looking at building off of last year's playoff success, continuing to make greater strides this season, and then continue to build on that next year and beyond. You don't want to be in that situation for Miami. And while we're hearing reports that Butler and his representatives are willing to re-sign in Miami, and that's the reason why Miami has to make that move to acquire him so they can get his bird rights, at the same time, there are concerns about his age. There are concerns that he might not be as effective a player a few years down the line. Are you sacrificing too much in order to give, you know, in order to acquire Butler? I'm not sure if it's a failure if they have to trade two or three guys. I still think it's a big risk and one you might not be willing to make.
I would not do it. One young guy max and not Bam. I wouldn't. And
like, we were pretty confident in moving Richardson last week, and then we heard the ultimate dream that maybe Richardson was off the table. If you make a deal, let's say you get Butler and you make a deal for, let's say, Richardson and Winslow, and you hang on to Bam Adebayo somehow, is that make it a good deal?
You're able to hang on to Bam, but you get rid of the other two guys. That's really tough, you know, because you're going to get Butler back, right? That's the idea, is you re-sign with your bird rights. But Winslow's deal, if the Heat were to re-sign him or extend him, would be a favorable deal, more likely than not. And you need those kind of contracts, especially when Jimmy Butler's contract is going to be a bloated one, right?
Sure.
And so it's less about, I mean, it's partly about the potential and wanting to hang on to those young guys and just sort of the connection that they have with the organization. But really, it's about getting the most out of your contracts, because you know, an NBA roster, typically you need to have guys who are going to outperform their deals. And if you get rid of, and the Heat, look, are already short on that sort of player. And if you lose two of your three young guys who are all going to outperform their contracts this season, then it makes it even more tough. And so that, to me, it would be a failure. And look, I don't think that the Heat would or will do that. I think that they'll offer maybe one of their young guys max, and it won't be Bam. It's going to be either Winslow or Richardson. I'm still of the belief that if you could part with Richardson and basically do Richardson plus salary for Butler, you do it. When push comes to shove. But what we're hearing is that the Heat want Josh Richardson off the table because they're envisioning a pairing on that perimeter of Josh Richardson and Jimmy Butler, and that's sort of why this thing is going to work. Right. Otherwise, you're just sort of upgrading Josh Richardson, but to a guy who is at who's going to get paid four times as much as Josh Richardson will, you know, 3 years down the road, and who by then ultimately might not be that much of an upgrade over him anyway, and certainly won't be worth 400% times his salary or whatever the math is. Yeah. So to that, I get it. But I still think you almost have to do it. That said, I could see this thing spilling over into the regular season. I know we thought that this thing is going to be close, and it feels like it's close now, but it's felt like it's been close before. And like, look, Carmelo Anthony, didn't he... When he tried to get out of Denver, didn't he ask for a trade right before the season, and it went all the way into December, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't recall that being as contentious, though. Like, I don't think he had a problem with the guys in the locker room. I think he was just looking to get paid and looking to move out of the Nuggets.
It was more of a Paul George situation. He was just like, kind of. I'm leaving after, just so you know.
Right, which is where the argument comes in, as we've seen. Bickering back and forth between Miami media and Minnesota fans and or media, kind of claiming who has the leverage here. Like, can Minnesota afford to keep Jimmy Butler where he is right now and not make a move until later on this season? It seems more than likely that that's not the case. From Minnesota's perspective, or from those fans that have been very vocal on Twitter, they seem to think it's not that big a deal. I think we're in the opposite end of that, where we think, you know, why would you want to hang on to a guy who clearly doesn't want to be there, who could disrupt everything? Let's say you're able to trade. Let's say you acquire a player like Josh Richardson or somebody else that can come and contribute right away. The goal is still to make the playoffs for Minnesota. Why would you be willing to risk that by have a potentially disastrous locker room situation, one that could be even more contentious than it was last season? If you hear all the reports about what's happened and things that I've seen, et cetera, you know, you could say that that locker room was really, really bad. And as fans, we all want to envision this perfectly harmonious locker room with 15 guys that are closer than brothers, and they get along, and they go to movies together, and they go and do all these wonderful things, have team dinners and all that stuff. That's not the reality. There are cliques, there are groups. Jimmy Butler's still been in contact with Jeff Teague, their point guard for the Timberwolves, so it's not right. Like he is hated amongst everybody, but he can't get along with Karl Anthony Towns.
Towns got the extension because he thought Butler was leaving, and right. And Minnesota already like disinvited Jimmy Butler to media day because they didn't want to deal with it. Like, he is as gone as you could possibly be gone, and they've got to make a move. So one report that I saw from Ira Winderman, South Florida Sun Sentinel, said that the Timberwolves don't want to take Deion Waiters or Hassan Whiteside back, but it also included James Johnson. And I found that kind of surprising. I thought I understand James Johnson is overpaid at between 14 and 15 million a year, but I think he'd be a really good fit next to Cat. Now, maybe they're like, well, we've got Taj Gibson, we're set at power forward, but which is a thing to believe. But I don't know. I still think there's so much posturing happening right now that it's like, you know, the Timberwolves were saying, we don't want Deion or Whiteside or James Johnson. We're not going to take either of them back. And Miami's saying, well, we're not giving you Bam and Josh Richardson. That's not happening.
Right.
There seems to be a lot of reports and activity and Woj bombs and whatever, but I just don't know that there's actually anything happening there. You know, it feels like a lot of posturing on both sides without that much constructive conversation happening, you know?
Yeah. Is this like a game of chicken to see who blinks first kind of thing?
I feel like that's exactly what's happening. Speaking of chickens, we've got a bird problem.
Brilliant.
You set me up for that. So I think we've got an idea of why things are taking so long in Minnesota. You know what? Let's take a quick break and then we'll get to that next. I want to talk to you about Locked On NFL because it's becoming a favorite daily NFL podcast. On Mondays, it's the local experts on the biggest stories from the weekend. On Tuesdays, former NFL and Miami Dolphins quarterback Sage Rosenfels joins host Matt Williamson, who will have some of the brightest voices in football on throughout the week, available on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Before we get to tonight's game against the Wizards, I want to talk about the story that I found in the Huffington Post, and I don't think enough people are talking about it because it explains a lot of what's happening in Minnesota. All right, so I'm going to read the first three paragraphs of the story. Minnesota birds are getting drunk on fermented berries, according to police. Some birds in Minnesota are getting really flocked up on fermented berries, according to police in the city of Gilbert. On Tuesday, the department posted a notice on Facebook warning citizens that it has received several reports of birds that appear to be, quote, under the influence, flying into windows, cars, and acting confused. Apparently, the birds are getting boozed up from berries that fermented earlier than usual due to an early frost. So birds are drunk based on berries. Berries are delicious. I think that the Minnesota's front office is eating said berries, and they are all drunk, and that's why they can't come to a conclusion or an agreement on what to do about Jimmy Butler. Does my theory have legs?
I'm trying to picture like a half-naked Tom Thibodeau up in the branches of some kind of dried-out tree in Minnesota, and it's a frightening thought. You know, picking berries somehow maniacally.
Screaming ice.
Yes. In a high pitch, like in a caw voice, almost like a high pitch. Yeah. That is terrifying. I might have nightmares tonight. But yeah, I guess it could explain a lot. Like, things are different in Minnesota. When we talked to Tim Fakeless, it feels like an eternity ago, even though I think it was just last week. You know, we kind of heard about this insular kind of Minnesota Twitter, you know, because of the years of oppression there. Minnesota is their own small universe. And of course, now you've got drunk birds flying into things. It's pretty terrifying. I'm not sure.
I have no desire to go to Minnesota at any point, like no time soon. I hear it's nice.
Yeah.
But if birds are flying into stuff, no thanks. Nope.
Yeah, that's, You know, there are birds that fly, I think, purposefully in Miami. Like, I remember there are, like, grackles. I don't know if you it's been a long time since you were in South Florida. I don't know if you recall what a grackle is, but they're, like, small crow-like birds.
Those little black ones.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
The females are browns and the males are black. And if you get too close to a nest, they'll, like, fly, at, like, dive bomb towards your head. And that's kind of weird because you're, like, just wandering around. You think everything's safe. And all of a sudden you hear, like, a flutter and you see, like, this shade in the corner of your eye. And it's an angry grackle trying to protect its nest because you just happen to be walking by it. I don't know if that's the same thing as, like, a drunk bird losing control and thinking it can gauge accurately how far away you are and all of a sudden loses control and bashes into your head. Or worse, can you imagine driving and all of a sudden a bird, like, hits your windshield? You'd freak out. You'd get into an accident. It's a potentially dangerous situation in Minnesota.
The one of the police said they're flying kind of erratically. We typically see them flying lower than usual through traffic. Like, I would... So,
I wouldn't drive.
Last year, a bird slammed into my windshield when I was driving on the highway.
Oh my God.
Was one of the most terrifying things ever. My girlfriend was actually sleeping in the passenger seat. We were coming back from some place, and she was sleeping, and it woke her up, and she screamed. And it was terrifying. I think it would be more terrifying to actually see birds driving
low
through traffic,
flying.
and then people trying to, like, weave in and out, because a bird can only do so much damage. Yeah, I could probably crack your windshield and that sucks, but like cars start weaving in out of traffic trying to avoid birds, and now we got cars crashing each other. Like, this is, don't go to minute, like, no wonder Jimmy Butler wants out. Like, he's probably gotten hit by like four birds by now. He's like, you know what, screw this place, I'm going to Miami. He probably doesn't know about the crackles. But speaking of that, I wanted to talk to you about what would be the most dangerous South Florida animal to get drunk, because we've got crazy animals in South Florida, and I think that, like, Minnesota, yeah, you got birds, cool, but, like, Miami can get pretty weird.
Yes. Are there gophers in Minnesota? Right? Isn't that their team name, the University of Minnesota Golden Gophers?
I would assume so. Yeah.
I don't know. That doesn't seem like they'd be very dangerous if they were drunk. What are they going to do, burrow extra hard? I don't know. Are they going to get stuck in a tunnel?
I feel like they would just be stuck underground, and nobody would ever know. Like, how many years would Minnesotans,
yeah,
have to go before they realized all the gophers were drunk? Like, would it be like 4 or 5 years? People are like, you know what, I haven't seen it in a long time, a gopher. And like they're all hammered underground. But like, yeah. So Miami, we talked a little bit about it before we started recording, and I feel like the dolphin would be the most dangerous animal drunk, right? Because
absolutely.
Like, we've seen the thing. We've seen news stories about, like, dolphins just, like, you know, playing in the ocean or whatever, and just sort of going up and, like, running into a dude on a jet ski, and, like, that guy's, you know, right elbow is broken or whatever. But if they're drunk, like, that would just happen way more often. That would be terrifying. Like,
yeah, it's a beautiful sight to see them kind of, like, hopping out of the water and swimming by you and stuff like that until you realize that they're smashed. And they have no idea what they're doing, and they kind of knock you off, and, you know, just, they could, I mean, from what we've heard and seen footage of, you know, they use those bottlenose dolphins, they use those nose to attack, like, sharks and stuff like that, and poke at them in their eyes. Could you imagine a drunk, belligerent dolphin just coming at you and poking at you with that thing? It could potentially do some damage. Now, there are other options, though, that we talked about. I think we kind of decided that maybe the gator or crocodiles, those would be very tricky. You know, in normal circumstances, under normal circumstances, they're shy, you know, they kind of run away from you when they hear you coming because humans are so loud and obnoxious. And so they kind of normally dive bomb back into the water and get away from you if you're walking in through the Everglades or something like that. But a drunk gator, I mean, he might be imbued with liquid courage. He might decide to come up on you there and wonder what you're doing walking through his territory, decide to bite off a leg or something like that. Next thing you know, you're stuck in like this drunk, what do they call that, death roll underwater? I mean,
the drunken death roll.
I mean, that would be like, terrifying, you know? I was like, hey, man, I was just walking through. He's like, oh, no, I don't think so. And he's going to take you underwater. Next thing you know, you're in this 10-minute death roll there. And he's kind of half-assing it, too, because he's drunk.
Right.
So it's not really, it's more like a lazy death roll than anything else.
It depends on what the gator is drunk on, right? Like, fermented berries, that's like wine, right? So if he's, like, drunk on wine, I feel like the gator would be, like, even more chill. He'd be like, you know what? It's all love, dude. But if it was, like, drunk on, like, Jameson or something like that, I feel like he would be really combative. He'd just be like, you're the dude that talked to my sister. You're going down. Like, that would be terrifying. And then you've got, like, you know, alligators mistaking houses for, like, wherever, like, their side of the canal or whatever. Sure. And so now they're wandering into houses that they don't belong in. And
they've done that. Like, they do that all the time.
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable. We used to have an alligator that lived in our backyard, and we were terrified of that happening all the time.
Yeah. What about panthers? No, not really.
Oh, my God.
Their numbers are kind of low, so yeah. And they cover, like, really big areas. I don't know. You know, warthogs? We have warthogs here, too, so yeah. I wonder, get an angry boar to come at you, you know? I see them on the side of the road all the time driving to Orlando. I imagine if they just start running onto the turnpike really angry, that would be pretty dangerous.
Can flamingos, like, run?
No.
I've never seen them. They just walk and stand, right?
Yeah, they walk.
Like, because, like, a flamingo... Or, like, what's the one with all the feathers?
You mean a peacock?
Yeah, a peacock. They are really mean. They're super dangerous, but I don't know that they're indigenous.
Well, they like, peacocks we are a dangerous problem in South Florida. I don't know if you know this, but they tend to defecate everywhere, and they're very loud, especially during their mating season. The males.
I think they were invasive, right? Like
they were brought over here by Spanish colonialists. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks, Columbus. Thanks for nothing. I'm trying to think. Manatees, that could get, you know, just because of their size, I can get tough.
They're already pretty slow, though. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, that's really... I think the dolphin and the alligator would be dangerous because now they not only are, you know, the alligators can affect, you know, land and sea and or land and water. And then you have the dolphins in the ocean. I mean, they've got you by all sides. I mean, that would be...
You know, we're forgetting because they come in such small sizes. But you know, insects. Can you imagine like a horde of drunk ants? I mean, that would be a mess. I mean, not only are they dangerous for like territory and property and stuff like that, but if they don't just start going crazy, it's no longer about feeding the queen. Now they're just going around and biting whoever walks by them. That would be that would be a bad situation there. So there are a lot of options. We want to hear from our listeners. What's the most dangerous drunk South Florida animal?
Yeah, for our mailbag. That'll be great. All right, let's talk about tonight's game. But first, Locked On NBA is here for you every day, not just Tuesdays with us. Every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories and then stay with Locked On NBA all week long to get daily news and analysis on everything going on in the league, available on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. The Heat will try to get their first win of the preseason when they play the Wizards tonight at 7. We'll look ahead to that matchup, but David, I'm concerned that with all this talk about how good Hassan Whiteside looks, Rodney Magruder being like the next great wing in the NBA, all the injuries, of course, that the Heat are dealing with and piling up, I feel like we're taking all of the preseason stuff way too seriously. Do you think where do you stand on that?
I kind of feel like this is a little bit more indicative than it has been in years past of what the team is going to look like. And maybe it's because I'm more immersed in preseason culture and analysis and everything else than I have been in the past, although I don't know if that's necessarily the case. But I just, like, there are so many teams and there's so much turnover during the off season. And even though for a team like Miami, obviously they're preaching continuity and it's been difficult to do so with so many injuries. So it's important to get good looks from guys like Whiteside and Magruder who struggled with injury last year. I'm not sure that we're taking it too seriously. I don't know that we're taking it too lightly either. Like you kind of want to do what we've been doing, which is taking a look at gameplay, seeing how certain players respond, seeing how certain lineups work, knowing that that could all change very dramatically if you acquire Butler, or even less so if you just get Richardson back into the lineup, which he's off the injury report according to Heat media. So according to Heat PR, rather, they've indicated that Richardson is available tomorrow to play against the Wizards. So that's something to look forward to. We'll see him in his first preseason action ever since the red, white, and pink game, the scrimmage at FAU earlier this week. But I don't know. Are you feeling like we're taking it too seriously looking at these things?
I feel like the whole, oh my gosh, injuries are piling up. The Heat are limping into the regular season just like they did last year. I'm hoping that we're taking that too seriously because I do feel like a guy like Wayne Ellington, he's listed as doubtful for the game with ankle soreness. Like, he would play if it was the regular season. James Johnson, we figure that they are holding him out for the entirety of the preseason just because he's still recovering from
that. He won't be available for the start of the season. That's what they told us at media day. So,
but like, I don't know.
Haven't you seen anything? I mean, haven't you seen anything from the preseason that you kind of, you know, are optimistic about? Aside from Whiteside's strong play and everything else, you know, something that you wanted to see out of the preseason that you've been able to? And that, you know, I mean, I think that's,
I mean,
that's
the Whiteside stuff's, the Whiteside stuff's been good. But we've seen flashes of Whiteside before, and we've been really promising, and we've said on this podcast, well, if he only plays like that, then we're problem solved. We've done that how many, like 15 times already. As far as the injuries and the continuity thing, I just, James Johnson, Waiters are really the only people I'm really worried about, and Waiters is barely a part of the team anymore because he didn't play for the last 50 games of the season, so it's not like that really messes up with the continuity. And then James Johnson, so really, is like the only major injury, and Miami's so deep, you know, with guys that they could play at that position, I'm not that worried about it. Especially when you have a guy like Justice Winslow who could sort of just do that. Yeah. So I'm not that concerned with that. I feel like we're a little bit too high with the Whiteside and the Magruder stuff. That said, there is, I do think that we've struck a nice balance on this show, trying to decipher and analyze what we're seeing. And that will continue with the Wizards game tonight. But I'm trying not to go too much into it because I just, until we get the guys on the floor, especially somebody like Wayne Ellington, who was basically the MVP of the offense last year, like until we see that on the floor, we just, there's a ceiling to how much analysis we can actually do.
Yeah, but that's what we're here for. I mean, look, I think it's fun to kind of go into it and see how these players start to mesh, you know, how they start to produce, maybe if there's been some improvement in the offseason. I'm probably a little bit more encouraged.
What are you watching for tonight's game then? Because that's true. Like, there are certain things that you're looking for in the preseason. Like, if you're a Lakers fan, you're looking to see what the lineups are and how LeBron interacts with his teammates.
Don't get me started on the Lakers.
You're getting
Tim Bontemps agrees with me, so I think that's pretty good. Yeah, I don't know. Did you see that piece from him earlier from the Washington Post?
Yeah, I don't agree with anything that was in there. But what are you looking for in this Wizards game?
I want to see if Whiteside continues to play at a high level. I'm also curious to see what Richardson looks like in his first action this season. Other than that, I'm hoping that Goron will kind of develop a spark that we haven't seen over the first two games, which, you know, that's predictable for him. He's a little bit older. He's a little bit slower. He's not the most explosive scorer at this point. So it's fair to say.
And kind of coming out of like a standstill offseason compared to last year.
Yeah, I mean, from what we've heard and what he told us at Media Day was that, you know, it's not quite as busy an offseason as it was last year when he was leading Slovenia to the European World Cup there, but at the same time, you know, working on different things, working on his right hand a little bit more than he was, you know, finishing with the right hand, something that he hasn't done in years past or not made as much of a focal point as he has in the past. So he did work. He's a little bit slower, I think, and that's fine. You know, we see this all the time. It takes guys a certain rhythm to get back into, and I'm sure once, you know, the bright lights of the regular season start, I think you'll start to see a little bit more engagement from these players. I also want to see Dwayne Wade come back, to be honest with you, because I'm kind of hoping that he'll have at least one solid, efficient game. It's been a struggle for him so far during the preseason. It's just two games, obviously, but his shot isn't falling, and I'm wondering whether or not he's questioning the decision at this point. There's been a lot of... I don't know. I don't...
Blasphemy.
Well, I mean, listen, I was doubtful that he was going to return at the start of the summer, and I was surprised to see him come back. But, you know, now that he's struggling with it, you wonder whether or not he's struggling with that decision, too.
I don't know. I'm interested to see what Washington looks like, because there's been a lot of talk with them about shooting more threes, doing a more, space-oriented game and things like that. So I'm interested to see what they do, because every year it seems like we go into the season, is this the year the Wizards put it together, blah, 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 blah. And this year we're not. Nobody's saying that. Like, nobody's, like, we just sort of forgot about them. So I feel like if they're going to do it, this would be the year to do it. And so I'm sort of, like, they're kind of flying under the radar a little bit. And I'm kind of interested to see what that looks like. So
has Dwight Howard played?
I don't know.
I haven't watched
under the radar. I haven't watched any Wizards games. Yeah, that's.
I know. I heard. I saw some footage. I saw Otto Porter playing well. I mean, I know you're. I think you like the Austin Rivers edition.
I do.
You know, what about John Wall and footage today kind of saying that, you know, he's... No, I'm sorry, footage on Thursday. Did you see this? Somebody asked him whether or not he has to dispel the notion that he quote-unquote parties too much. And he didn't do much to silence that criticism. I think he basically just said, I'm a grown man, I can do whatever the hell I want. Yeah, that's fair. I think... But at the same time, like, I know we talked about John Wall being a potential trade target for Miami at some point last year, like everybody. I think we're both a little bit soured on that notion. I don't know if Wall is the guy that we necessarily want on our team.
Especially, I mean, like, the D.C. area is supposed to be a big party town anyway, but it won't help if he's in Miami. But look, hey, he's a grown-ass man. He could do whatever he wants, just like the birds in Minnesota. If they want to eat fermented berries, let him do it. They're grown-ass birds. They could do whatever they want.
Like, I think we assume so. I mean, we don't know. Maybe the young birds are eating these fermented berries. What if there's no underage bird drinking limits?
There's probably not, but somebody's got to do something about their parents because that's irresponsible. So, I don't know.
The show's off the rails. We're back in August, everybody.
All right, we should end it there. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. As always, you can reach us by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And of course, make sure to hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or whatever you use to listen. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. Thanks for joining me, David.
I'm a grown-ass bird. I do what I want.
Thanks for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.